Welcome to Software Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I've been SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starblade Warlord. Just my hand joins me at Talk Guest every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone system 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search the quality 17702 or SFB On Call or Starblade Universe On Call. And you should be able to find us there. And, of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on the Twitter/X/whatever it's called this week. That would be my podcast account. It is, of course, sfuoncall. My personal account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And, of course, my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. There's no T in that. And of course, this lovely podcast gets into the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And this week, some quick news from ADB. Actually, there is none. They're still working on the replacing Shapeways. When it comes to found the online store for this week, we have the Galactic Conquest Rulebook. It's 1995. This is a newly updated 5th edition of the most famous campaign rules in the Starfleet universe. Use these rules in the official campaigns or to the build your own campaign, including everything. Conquest, exploration, alliances, diplomacy, construction, technology, development, ships, bases, and a thousand more other things. This campaign system is designed to use with Starfleet battles. It might work with other game systems if you go to some effort and assume that you either create your own map or use the map provided by the campaign game masters. The new edition includes an extensive index, which makes it easy to track them exactly what you want to do. Moving on, moving forward to the SFB Online tournament, Sapphire Star 18 tournament signups are open. We have 7 signups. That means we have 9 more slots available. As soon as those slots are gone, they're gone, and the tournament starts off like a rocket. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to online client, actually, I'm planning on recording the Federation Commander videos because of someone actually was interested in playing Federation Commander. The problem was that they didn't know how to use the client. And I pointed them to some videos and found out they were 13 years old. So it helped them get started. The client has changed quite a bit since that time. So I'm hoping to get back on that horse and get going on updating those videos. Hopefully I can get some of that done this weekend. I would love to spend a few hours just working on that. And when it comes to library port, there's actually been no updates. There actually might have been an update, but I have not had a chance to post that. Federation Commander, again, nothing to update there. So with that, that is the news for this week.
That's me, it's my old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
And we have Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Good evening, everybody. Hope your trick-or-treating went well.
Unfortunately, I didn't have any trick-or-treating. I just giving out the trick-or-treats, which actually I'm going to be handing out a lot more on Sunday because of they have a Jack Frost parade in Robinsonia, right near where my church is. It's a small town. And right down Main Street, they have a parade, which is of course all set up for Christmas, which is fine. But we give out usually people give out candy during the parade, and any extras, okay, I'm giving it away. So, and of course, I forgot the most important person of all. Hey, Doug.
Hey, hi, Dan. I'm here. What do you mean they have a Christmas parade tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow.
Sunday, but still, Turkey Day's next. Wait in line. Get in line. Tell Fat Boy to get.
I know,
mine.
Right?
Hey, jeez. Be happy that it's.
Sunday. I have to put my family to sleep with turkey on Turkey Day, hopefully.
Although tryptophan, yes.
Uh huh.
Well, unfortunately, my family doesn't like turkey. So we have chicken.
We've alternated. Yeah, ham too sometimes.
I wouldn't mind having ham. I don't do much, and that is I don't buy ham much.
And what do you guys do for Turkey Day?
Well,
it depends on if I'm on the road or not.
And I'm guessing Gary doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving in Canada.
Well, Tofurkey Day up here is earlier in October. It's the same day that you guys have another holiday that has various names around it.
Yes, yes. Ah, yes, I forgot.
You know, we should start a campaign to have, like, Canada break up and join the U.S. as, like, a bunch of new states. That way all the holidays can be, like, synced and everything. And we could have two Independence Days.
Doug, there's a book you need to go to the library
work out for
and
you in, like, 18
dig
miles,
out.
So I wouldn't recommend trying to get in.
There's a book in the library you need to go
yeah,
dig
out. I know
up.
They tried to go back in
5440 or Fight.
Yeah.
Very interesting book.
Yeah. No, they actually tried to do that back around at the turn of the last century, and it failed.
Yeah, that was the book 5440 or Fight is about that endeavor.
Yeah.
That's where they wanted to set the boundary, which would have effectively taken 90%+ of Canadians of the Canadian population and converted them into Americans, whether they wanted to be or not.
No, let them do it voluntarily. That way they can, we can just laugh at them later.
And of course, Quebec would still be separate from the rest.
Yeah, they don't have to join. They don't have to join. It's okay.
Last time I was in Quebec for work, I was asking for help, and I heard very, very, very polite people in very clear, unaccented English telling me that they do not speak English. It wasn't that they didn't speak English. It was that they chose not to, because if I didn't know
French.
Quebec French, not high school French, Quebec French, they didn't have anything for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they can have their own little enclave and, like, freaking starve. Let them be on their own during the zombie apocalypse. Beat that zombie with your baguette. Enjoy.
No, that's the French. The French had the baguettes. The Quebec, uh-uh.
Unfortunately, the Quebecs would probably end up chucking Timmy Ho's stale Timmy Ho's donuts at him.
No, poutine. That's what they'd be chucking. Poutine.
Poutine is not just Quebec. It's more.
I know.
Oh, never mind.
I know it's very Canadian. And
for any of our Canadian listeners, including the one on the line with us, we're not bagging on Canada out of malice.
No.
This is all good-natured humor.
Yes. Yes. And Gary's a naturalized one. Became a citizen. Which, how many years has it been, Gary?
Oh, yeah, you're back.
A few.
Yeah, because I remember you told us many, many years ago when it happened. I just can't remember when that was.
But, it was a while back, that's right.
Yeah.
But, so, as far as the actual podcast goes,
yes.
There were actually three little, small to medium-sized things I wanted to mention, unless you guys had other plans.
Yeah, but no, please. I was kind of hoping you would have been here last week when we were talking about Andrew War.
Well, that's why I was trying to call in, but, I was having a technical issue, so.
Right.
But
it happens.
First of all, Is there any update on the client working for as a Flatpak for Linux?
No. I definitely I have to work on that. I've been working on different features is what I've been working on. I had a plan, started working the plan, and then life got involved, and the plan got out thrown out the window. Which was I was recording videos. I recorded a set of videos for how to play SFB online, you know, using the client. I recorded new ones for YouTube. And I know I need to do some for Federation Commander because I looked at the ones I have currently up on YouTube. They're 13 years old. And I looked at them and went, man, that is old. Because I'm looking at the, it's, of course, I recorded on a Mac. So the Mac, the look and feel is Mac. And it's old Mac. It's 13-year-old Mac. And actually, there's
old Mac. Gosh, good grief. That's like Lion or Snow Leopard, maybe.
That sounds about right. Wow. I can't remember.
Because I got a, because in 2012, I got a MacBook and it came with Lion.
Mm-hmm. It probably was Lion. But they had the blue buttons and all that kind of thing still back then.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, Well, and the reason I want to try to get back to it is just because of this one guy actually was interested, and I had to point him to these old videos how to get started playing Federation Commander. Because he wanted to learn it, and actually, I just checked today, and he got a subscription, which is awesome. It's only a 3 months per subscription, but that's fine. I'm sure what he's doing is doing what a lot of people do, which is 3 months. Let's try it out and see if I play enough, you know, versus paying for a whole year, you know, which is in my mind great, you know, so. So that's where my head has been. I still have my Steam Deck sitting right down here. It's been sitting there for a while. So no, I have to get back to working on the Flatpak. So that's the update on that.
Second question is. So, on the BBS, if you go have a look for the one of the off-topic boards, there's a section about other war games. And a while back, I posted a bit about there's a new source book called BattleTech Universe, which came out a few weeks ago. And that concept of book is something I wanted to talk about for a couple of minutes.
Okay, I'm looking. Oh, what was that? Okay.
And ba-doing, we're back.
Oh, you're the one. You got disconnected. Okay. Other war games. Is that it? I don't know.
Other war games, yes.
Yeah, there it is. Oh, man.
Okay. What's the matter?
No. What was surprising to me was Mech Warrior 5 Clans has been released on the PC and the console.
It's not Steam Deck. Well, I mean, in theory, people say that they've been able to start it up, but it's definitely not optimized for it.
Understood.
I'm hoping that they might add Steam Deck compatibility in the future, but for now, it seems to be better on more powerful PCs. But there actually are people doing online playthroughs, and apparently it's really good in terms of being very very good in terms of like the cinematics and so forth, like representing the world of BattleTech in the era of Operation Revival quite dramatically. So
is it turn-based?
Makes one wonder what a TV show would be like, but no, the BattleTech game that came out in 2018 was turn-based, but this one is You're in the pilot. Your pilot is.
Oh, first person.
You can play up to 5-player multiplayer as well.
Oh, okay. So first person, like Call of Duty and things like that. But in this case, you're a mech. You're in a mech.
I think you can switch it to a third person as well. Yeah, and since you're playing as one of the clans, you can set up to 5-player because the idea is that each of the 5 players are part of the same star.
Okay. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, because I was actually, I think I played MechWarrior, I forget which one, which is turn-based on the Steam Deck. Which is, I never could get
the one that was turn-based was the one you're thinking about is the Harebrained Schemes version of Battletech. That's the one that's turn-based. I think,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I think the one we're talking about is the war sim rather than the tabletop sim.
Oh no, this wasn't the tabletop sim that I was playing. It's just that it was like, I forget what it is. But basically it's asynchronous play where you define where each mech will be going and then you run the turn.
That's right. But the main difference is that the Harebrained Schemes Battletech game is set during the Succession Wars. Whereas with MechWarrior 5 clans, it's set during the clan invasion, so
right.
You get to actually use clan omnimax because the other one had more primitive inner sphere mechs instead.
Right.
Oh, okay, cool. That the Introductory Rogue source book is now available.
Yeah, that's right. So basically what it is as you know, there's a lot of people who, especially with the recent Kickstarters, there's a lot of people who maybe they played Battletech 20 years ago or something like that, and they thought that the game disappeared. It didn't, but the perception was that it did. And maybe they fell off, but they came back either through the video games or through the Kickstarter or something like that.
Oh, understood. Like SFB.
Or there's people who were, because there's a lot of people coming into the universe for the first time who maybe have never played Battletech at all. And so they're seeing things like the new Alpha Strike box set or whatever in the shops, or the new 40th anniversary introductory box set for Classic Battletech and so forth. So a lot of the products that were basically made possible due to the success of the Kickstarters. And so the idea with Universe is to be a rules agnostic book that you can present to somebody either in physical form, there's a coffee table version of it as well, or as a PDF, and it'll basically give you an overview of the timeline. Well, it doesn't give you date, like it's not a timeline, but basically an overview of each era up until the very beginning of the current Ill Clan era on the one side, and then also it gives you a breakdown of many of the relevant factions, like the Great Houses and many of the prominent clans and periphery states and so forth on the other. And in the midst of all that, it also gives you information about how hyperspace travel works and how battle technology works and what elemental battle suits are and those kind of little things. And basically just to kind of give you an idea about
elemental suits,
the ins and outs of the universe that you'd be getting into.
Yeah, so basically,
and this book is like about 250 pages or so, 280 or so.
This says 280 in the post.
And it's fully colored. Yeah, it's fully illustrated as well. I mean, some of the art was commissioned just for it. Like, it's amazing. Actually, a lot of it is very reminiscent of the stuff that you see in the Battletech video game. Because, in the early part of the history, they show the very first colony ship that was sent to Tau Ceti. In the early days of the what would become the Inner Sphere. And the image, you could almost tell that they took at the opening sequence from the Battletech video game and tried to use that as the inspiration for the way that they wanted to present the material here.
Yes. One of the first mods I ever downloaded was one that let me bypass that screen. It was great to see once, but it's like when you were going through, and as finicky as that BattleTech, that version of BattleTech was, particularly on launch, it was like, okay, all right, everything just crashed. All right, I had to go in here and tweak a file and bang this bit and knock that save file around. All right, now go back and load. Now it's another 45 seconds before I can get to the point where I can select how to get back in it. Modern gaming problems, right?
I understand. First world problems. Gotta love it. Basically, it sounds like a history slash background material book, which talks about this is the universe in which BattleTech is a part of. Which,
yeah. So basically, what I would say is that basically anybody who's in one of those situations where they've been out of the game for a while and they want to get caught up with what's happening now, or if they are brand new to the universe, and no matter which game system they have, because as I say, there's no rules in the actual book. So if you mainly play Alpha Strike, it's perfectly fine, like to have the Alpha Strike box set and the Commander's Edition rulebook and this. Or if you want to go with classic BattleTech, you can get the various like classic BattleTech boxes and the rules for Total Warfare or Battle Myth Manual, whatever way you want to approach it. And this book will still be fine for that. Or if you just want to do role-playing, this book will help with that too. But the reason why I wanted to talk about the book is less to try and sell the book in and of itself. Because
right.
I mean, that's not really the main goal I was going for. What I was going for is that I really think that an equivalent book like that for the Starfleet universe
right.
would be great. Like something that basically, regardless of whether you play Federation Commander, or if you play Starfleet Battle, Star Matter, Call to Arms, whatever, Prime Directive RPG, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
if there was basically a side book that showed, here's what the Milky Way galaxy looks like, here's a brief overview of the various Alpha Empires, here's the Omega Empires, a little brief overview of them, here's something about the Magellan Cloud, here's the Andromedans, here's M81, here's early Earth, here's X-ships and so forth, here's how the universe grows, like some of the basic concepts about things like, tactical warp, the ship level relative to, operational and so forth. Like some of this information is scattered around a whole bunch of different, a source book. So whether it's one or two of the Prime Directive books,
right.
or if it's the Omega Master Rule book, or it's Module C5.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really kind of difficult to be able to present to somebody, here's all these things, and here's illustrations, here's what the five species of the Interstellar Concordium look like, or here's the robots that the Andromedans use, or here's what the Nisran member species look like, and all that kind of thing. I mean, something that would basically did the job that BattleTech Universe does. It doesn't have to be as expensive as BattleTech Universe in terms of the production value, because there's a lot more money nowadays, because they can afford to make universes flashy a product as it is. But it doesn't have to be like that. Something that is like, you print it in black and white, but it still has a color PDF or something. I think that would be enough. And basically, you could just say to anybody, hey, read this, and this will hopefully basically encourage you to want to delve more into whichever part of the SFU you want, and
right.
whichever game system you want. And you'll know that everything is reasonably consistent, and it'll basically help you feel that much more immersed into what the universe has to offer.
Right, right. Of course, there are definitely some issues with that for SFB. Some of those things are, one, we don't have a complete history of the, like, Omega. We don't have the complete history of the Andromedans, or even the Tholian galaxy, things like that, where we have bits and pieces, but don't have the whole thing. And
on top of that, we may have licensing issues as well.
True. But given that, we have to put those pieces together. That's number one. Number two, I would think that the biggest issue I would think that AEW would have with that would be with itself. I know, Gary, I know you're one of those people that would buy that. I would probably buy that too.
Yeah.
Some of the people who do role-playing games, whether it is actually Star Trek or possibly just based off of SFB, you know, maybe grab one of the Prime Directive ones, which have on different engines, you know, GURPS, D20, D20 Modern, all of them, because that would give them a lot of background material to play. To be honest, I don't know how many people actually use Prime Directive when it comes to the game itself. No matter which version, you know, whether it's, again, GURPS, Prime, you know, D20 or whatever engine. I'm not sure how many people actually buy it and play it. Only person I think could have a good idea of that would be, of course, Steve Cole. And I'm willing to bet that has a much smaller amount of people than, like, Federation Commander. At least that would be my bet on that. And then here's the weird thing, and it's kind of related, kind of not related. And that is, sometimes, I'm not sure about you guys, but sometimes I feel like we're old school in that we actually like to play tactical games on the actual board. Versus,
I know,
well, a lot of people like to play tactical games, but they want it on a computer. Have the computer do all the tough stuff. You know, and then, of course...
Yeah, the Battle Royale really supplanted the tabletop game.
Well, even not in the Battle Royale.
Eh.
You know, things like... some of the games where you can actually play out these large battles of men or ship. I'm not sure how many actually allow you to play ships. I don't think many do, actually.
Yeah, there's a bunch out there. There's a ton of them.
Yep.
There's tons of games for whatever genre you want.
And the thing about it is that Games Workshop is to blame for almost all of them, based on a lot of people trying to get into the game system that shall not be named, deciding that they didn't want to sink their entire retirement nest egg into all the miniatures and paints they had to buy in order to play it.
Oh, you're talking about...
Well, that's only partially the deal. That is a local game shop issue. If you want to get into, like, wargaming, you can get into it and still have it as a fairly inexpensive hobby, comparatively speaking. But
I refuse to play
that game that shall not be named because of how... I mean, I saw how abusive it is to the player base when I first came across it back in the 80s and 90s, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, Magic the Gathering.
Their players, right, don't do them any favors either.
Issue with that is, yeah, there is a significant issue with some of the player base, but at the end of the day, the real problem with those games is the game companies basically milking the heck out of, you know, their player base. They have a predatory setup. It's literally a predatory setup, and there's abusive monetization. It's the kind of thing that would make, like, your average little bitty phone game that's supposed to monetize all your money away blush. You know,
heck, it's where the freemium game model got its ideas.
Yeah, among other things.
Oh, you're already hooked. You've already spent $1,000 to play. Well, if you want to continue to be competitive, you've got to go out and get this new set. That's another $300.
Well, and now, and then they've shown their true colors years ago when they started saying, okay, well, your army set is now obsolete.
Right.
You have to buy a whole new set of miniatures to be official.
Yep. I remember hearing about
people
that.
People won't play with you if you're not official. And it's like, yeah, it's like I was turned off just by hearing I had to have their miniatures to play the game. Versus like my introduction to
in their paints
to miniatures my introduction to that genre of gaming was actually going to the Lancaster convention when it wasn't at Lancaster, HMGS. Playing different games there that people bought their minis for at the convention and, you know, painted them at home and had their own hobby thing, but they didn't care if it was GDW miniatures or some other random miniatures company, as long as the miniatures kind of looked decent and you could tell it was German this or Allied that for their particular game.
Right.
You know. They were just happy to have players playing the game. And it's like, and the companies that ran those games, they weren't like trying to maximal monetize their people, you know, the way the way the Games Workshops just abuses the heck out of their player base. So it's like, what's that lady's name? I can't think of her name, that runs Dungeons and Discourse or something like that. She has a, let's just say she kind of has a special place in her heart for these people and talks about them all the time because she actually likes to play that game, but she absolutely hates how they treat the players. You know, and she's like a lawyer in Ireland or something. It's an awesome channel. Yeah, she's awesome to listen to. I the pure entertainment value of Dungeons Discourse. Oh my gosh. But we digress. What were we talking about again? Something about Zork is a mud. I don't know. We were getting somewhere.
I'm not sure. I think I'm to blame for this digression. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. It's a perfectly good digression. You know, maybe you can play this podcast back to the kids someday and say, "There's some good old Grognard ranting right there."
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah. I don't know.
So I guess what I was trying to get at is that regardless of how a person engages in the BattleTech universe, like whether they read the novels or if they play any textual games or any of the other scales of games that they support, or maybe they just play the video games and they just want something to kind of like get a sense of what quote unquote really happens in the universe. Universe is basically set up now. I leave it to each person to read the book and see for themselves how well it does. Like there's a couple of things that are missing here and there, but you know, it's, I guess they couldn't fit for everything. And sadly, there's no index in the book either. So I would have preferred if it actually came with a thing saying, oh, you want to know about this? These are the source books or novels that deal with that subject or whatever. So it'd be nice if they did some sort of like PDF supplement or something that did that.
Right. I noticed that you kind of...
When it comes back to PSFU...
And as you mentioned, that you know they didn't point to the source books like the in BattleTech, which, you know, I took as you were kind of annoyed at that because you like to know, you know, where to look for that stuff. Really? Sorry, my cat is being
and
very
the man cute. Zen Wars continue. Sorry, Gary.
You're not seeing the cute cat that's currently in my arms.
Like a perfect universe equivalent.
Aww, cute kitty.
Yeah, because like.
Yeah, continue. I'm sorry.
So that's what an SFU book could do, basically, where it could be inspired by the BattleTech Universe book for most of it. But then at the back of the book, you can say, oh, you read this far? By the way, here's where you learn about XYZ in each game system. So you basically have the jump off points in your hands. Ready to go. Now I should also mention that the book universe. It does very briefly cover the current El Clan era, but it only, because I mean, the El Clan era itself is still in the process of being built, or being created. So okay. If you want to know more about what's happening now, then there are current source books and novels and so forth that are being written up and published that go further. So, you know, a few years from now, it would go past, it would definitely go, I mean, technically the universe already goes past the point that the universe book stops, but that's okay, because that's kind of the point. Basically, the idea is that Catalyst is making a big push as to setting the Old Planet era as the current setting for the universe, and universe is basically intended to get everyone to the start point, and then they can jump into the post-Ill Clan novels and source books and game materials and so forth, so that everyone's on the same page going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, it would be nice if Module X2 was already in print by the time, or F&E Andrew War or something else was already in print by the time a Starfleet Universe book was done.
Mm-hmm.
But in theory, at least, it could be presented in such a way, basically, to say, you know, the next big thing is going to be the X2 era or whatever. So the book could be presented, like, maybe you can call it Starfleet Universe Book Volume 1 or something. And maybe don't make it too expensive either. Like, it doesn't have to be as pricey as Universes, or Baltic Universe or whatever. And then once more source books come out over the next 5 or 10 years, you could then do Starfleet Universe Guide Volume 2. And Volume 2 could include things like X2 or the next thing for more about the LMC or more about M81 or something like that, whatever. So that's together, the two volumes give a player an overview about what to expect out there in the universe, and also an index so that to guide them where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Such a title has been on my wish list for years, Gary. I think one of the problems we have with between us and getting such a thing is that Steve Cole is so busy doing the things he is doing, he doesn't have the time to sit back and act as a publishing editor and grand high poobah of the Starfleet Universe Gazetteer Society in order to put it out. Yeah, it would be a wonderful thing to have.
Agreed.
For now, at least, what I'd recommend is, now, again, I don't want any, at the very least, there's a PDF preview on DriveThruRPG if people want to get a glimpse about what Universe offers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't want people spending money if they don't really feel like they want to. So,
right.
But at the very least, the PDF preview should be enough. Like, you know, not tonight, but, you know, if you, at some point over the next few weeks, if anyone wants to have a glance at it so they can get a better sense about what, you know, what the structure is that we're talking about here. And so they can basically think for themselves, you know, how, if at all, would an equivalent book for the SFU work?
Mm-hmm.
And would you want to see such thing? And yeah, so I guess we could take up the conversation at some future point, if you like.
Understood. Interesting. Sorry, I clicked on the Catalyst Game Labs to see what else was there. So, that's me. Leviathans? Oh, that looks interesting. Maybe we should look at that. It looks interesting. Anyway.
And the print version of it should be showing up in stores around now as well, if anyone wants to see that. I'm sure if their nearest bookstore has it, then they can pop in and see if it's available to glance at or not.
Right. If, especially if your bookstore actually sells books for games, which I have to check. In theory, Barnes & Noble might have it. Because actually, Barnes & Noble also sells games.
There are bookstores, and I think in the U.S., some Targets have been actually selling BattleTech. What they've been doing is that they've been selling bespoke miniature sets just for some of those stores. Now, we don't have those books in Canada, so we're not able to see them up here. But if anyone listening in the U.S. is near one of those stores, then they might be able to pop in and see stuff like that on the shelf now.
It blows my mind that you can go to a brick and mortar store that is a specialty boutique store and see gaming stuff like this based on what I remember growing up.
Oh yeah. Well, the big problem when you were growing up, those games, they were boutique. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It was new. It was novelty. It was super niche then.
Right, and the number of copies, unlike like Monopoly was selling the millions. You're not gonna sell a million copies of these games.
No.
200,000 if you're lucky. That's you know. Not in that store. Yeah, but even across the nation, in the niche stores, or. And because when you sell to like Toys R Us, at least when they still existed, they would sell a lot of games, and if it was a big seller, they'd be happy to sell them, but they weren't into the whole war games and so forth.
Well. Toys R Us is kind of an oddball one. I mean, it's kind of like the Walmart of toy stores. And I do remember them having things in there that kind of hit the genre a bit.
Yeah.
Not to the degree that you would have at your local hobby shop.
Right, especially later on.
Local hobby shop guy is literally doing that specialty item for his group of players that come in and ask for it specifically. Whereas, those guys have like their whole BattleTech side of it. But I remember you could buy stuff like, your Axis and Allies games, stuff like that. You could get there.
Yeah.
All the old Avalon Hill titles.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of those. I remember seeing those in Walmart at one point.
Yep. And I remember us actually, my brothers getting those games. We never really played them. We have them, but we never really played them. Especially Avalon Hills. The one we did play was Stocks and Bonds. That's one of those ones that we played a lot of. But we had the original Starship. Darn it.
You're not thinking Starship Troopers, are you?
Starship Troopers, yes. The original Starship Troopers.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're thinking of.
You had the suits. Starship Troopers, this is before the movies came out, where basically you got infantry, which you got. You don't have what was originally envisioned in the Starship Troopers, the novel.
I was about to say. So the game was actually designed by somebody who read the entire book, not just a bit here and a bit there, like the guy who wrote the movie.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. I have that. I actually have that game here somewhere. Yeah, it's in the basement. Oh my gosh! Yeah. Matter of fact, I remember buying that at a game store that wasn't a niche game store.
Mm-hmm.
I was like totally shocked to actually see it in there, and it was dirt cheap.
Yeah, I actually read all the rules. I never played it, but I actually read all the rules because I still remember part of it was going around with nuclear weapons.
Uh huh.
That was
a fun game.
One of those things.
Tactical nuclear.
Right. And the thing of the whole idea of Starship Troopers, when it comes to the novel and so forth, is that you one person is basically a squad of people,
small army,
basically a smaller, and they would actually jump, you know, have the jump chutes that they actually could jump and leap many long distances, you know.
Well, it was based straight off of the books,
right? I know it was.
I liked how they had hidden movement in it too. They had a lot of interesting different like play styles you could do with that game,
right?
So, but then again, yeah, that's a whole other issue. Oh, the nostalgia bone is getting hit hard tonight.
Hey, come on. We can't help it.
You just got me thinking about the fact that the first time I ever played Battletech, the mech sheet I had was the Battle Droids branded mech sheets, because the guy we were playing with was trying to use up his photocopies from the pre-lawsuit version.
Oh, jeez.
The original version of Battletech was called Battle Droids until LucasArts sued them.
Oh. I ever got to play Battle Droids. I only got to buy
it. It plays exactly like the original boxed edition of Battletech. As a matter of fact, it wasn't substantially different at all. The only thing different was is that they went from Battle Droids to Battletech, and they changed all the apostrophe droids to apostrophe mech throughout the text, and that was about the only editorial changes they made.
Right.
Of course, back in that day, the only books we had available were Battletech, City Tech, and 3025 technical readout, and I remember we were excited when 3026 came out, and we just ate all that up.
Oh yeah. Do you remember Aerotech?
Yes, I do remember Aerotech, but we didn't drop have ships? It at the time.
Right.
We knew about drop ships. We knew they were bad news if somebody landed one on the battlefield, but we didn't have rules for it. We didn't have any of the sheets for it because the local hobby store was having difficulty ordering one.
Right. The only time I played some Aerotech, but I actually played the actual not. I never played in the jump ships. We were playing with the I don't want to say fighters. I don't remember if they were fighters or not. I think they might have been fighters.
Yeah, there were fighters. There were fighters.
And they had the same design where you had the heat sink and so forth.
Oh yeah.
And it was
Aerotech book also gave the most rule breaking thing in the entire game at that era, and that was land air mechs.
Oh. Yes.
You could turn around and you could go between you could go full Robotech,
right,
and change into that halfway state between a fighter and a battle mech, and then suddenly all the massive amounts of air moving over all of your mech surfaces allowed the weapons to fire in aerospace mode, meaning that suddenly you were not counting hexes of range, you were counting maps of range, so all of your small lasers were like suddenly acting like super sniper weapons. We had a lot of arguments over that.
I am sure.
Some friendships got damaged pretty hard from those rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the dropships were kind of cool.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, actually, I read one or two of the clan books too. When they came out, those were interesting. But what was that?
Also, Barry says hi.
Who says hi?
Just Barry.
Oh, Barry. Oh, he...
Yeah, I forgot to mention that I was talking to him earlier today, and he said to tell you guys hi.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's been a long time since he's been...
Hi, Barry!
Barry's not one of those people I actually imagine actually listen to the podcast afterwards. You know, his loss, but...
I think he does on occasion.
But just to know how my voice sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to possibly get together with someone last weekend. After my wife and I got back from Denver. And it's like, that's actually 2 weekends ago. I think now. I was so out of it. I was too tired. Still recovering from coming east from Colorado. 2 hour difference, and of course then we took the red eye, so you know. It is what it is. But anyway. Gary, was that the only two topics? I think that was the two, right?
Yeah, that was two. Linux Flatpak thing for the client, and right. Also BattleTech Universe.
Okay.
So, I guess the third thing was just the kind of catch up on what you guys were talking about last week with Android War. Now, to be clear, Steve have said that the actual rules themselves are, you know, him and the staff are working on them, and they're not taking inputs.
Right.
I'm told they say they're taking inputs, so
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go there. So I did try and post like some historical context stuff, whatever, like stuff that's from like for other empires and for other game systems and, you know, background material and so forth that exists that people can review. And hopefully mm-hmm. by the time the conversation does get to the point where you know, BBS discussion takes place, so that people will have more informed ability mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, add to, you know, or comment on whatever the staff come up with. So, but there was something. I'm trying to think now. So,
The one thing that really kind of, that I brought up, you know, which I thought it's definitely something to keep in mind, which is I don't feel like when it comes to the game that all the units of the Andromedans have to be representative, you know, because I'm not sure if the pseudo satellite ships really need to be represented. The energy modules, I'm not sure if they need to be represented, you know.
What game are you talking about here? What game company are you
Paul,
talking about?
Paul, which side are you on?
Do you know the environment of which you speak? I mean, seriously, it's like saying, we're going to like forge, we're going to do our own, you know, little podcast about forging and fire, and we're not going to have fire. Come on. This is a guy like, who he did what? He included fighters in F&E.
Well, MPS. Kind of. Yeah, that has not been released yet, and Lord knows, I hope it dies. On the table.
Well, they're still, they're still part of the game. Yeah,
no, fighters are a decided part of Federation and Empire.
Yes.
Yeah, Federation Empire. I'm sorry. Yeah, but he's got that in there. So there you go.
But I think what Paul's
yeah.
complaining about is he didn't want to see fighters attack a peer for Federation Commander.
Oh, definitely that. That's true. That's true. I think the whole idea of adding. Yeah. Everyone having fighters in Federation Commander, I think it's such a bad idea. Such a bad idea. That it
but it's still a Starfleet universe.
Because the reason why we have things like wild weasels, we have T bombs. We need all these things to defend against these stupid fighters, these stupid attrition units that gives you so many drones that get launched and at your fleet, that it's sin freaking insane. You know, that's why I hope it, I know it's not quite not still on the drawing board. There have been beta rules created for that, but I still hope that they never reach out to general release, because dang. Sorry, I have it going off on that. Right, but
I just have this like space opera feel to it.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Scary. Sorry.
So,
back to F&E.
Okay. So, to this point, most of the expansion modules for F&E give you a broad variety of units for empires that already existed print to that point. The main exceptions are, for now at least, the ones that introduce brand new factions, with one exception. So, for example, the ISC, they're introduced in ISC War, of course, but the ISC War module only has ISC ships. Now, some of the rules in ISC War will eventually apply to other empires. Like, there's some sort of reserve rule that other alpha empires get access to during the Andromedan War, and it actually tells you what year these things happen. But for the most part, the stuff in ISC War is intended to be for the ISC itself.
Right.
Similarly, when F&E Minor Empires came out, it has material for the Lyran Democratic Republic, the Rudar, and the Sultorian. Although I will say that for me personally, a big issue I have with Minor Empires is that there is no historical campaign for the Sultorians. All of the campaigns in it are ahistorical, like they're made up ones. So that means that there still, at some point, would need to be a proper campaign to represent what actually happened when the Hive Ship shows up through to the point where the ISC came in and smashed it. So I'm hoping that that can happen at some point in the future. Because it might need to, anyway. But the third thing is...
One quick question about the Sultorians, real quick, which is, are they represented in F&E, yep, even though the campaign's not available? Okay.
Not that I'm aware
of. So, F&E Minor Empires gives you a bunch of counters for the Sultorians, and it also gives you an order of battle to represent when they first arrive in Y-182. And it also basically gives you rules in terms of, like, how many booms and hull sections they can build, and, you know, how much they need to spend in order to, like, create a medium shipyard or something like that, because the rules that you get, the idea is that the Hive ship basically comes with a transportable, like a collapsible yard, that it's able to deploy. It takes about 2 years to do it. And once that's deployed, the yard can produce a small amount of additional units. But what you can also do is that the rules of Minor Empires allow you, if you have enough time and economic points to do it, you can actually build a medium shipyard that allows you to build dreadnoughts. But the way the Sultorian production works is you never build complete units. You're always building booms, and then you're building secondary hulls.
Oh.
And you're combining them together. So, for example, if you want to build a light cruiser, you just have the medium-sized secondary hull and one boom.
Right.
And if you want to build a heavy cruiser, you're putting two booms on there instead. So basically, kind of like the way that it's shown in FFE or Fed Commander, you're creating that as the Sultorian player in Fed Empire. But the only problem is that if you want to actually play the historical campaign that leverages those rules, the way that they actually played out historically, that component is not there yet. So okay. I'm hoping that a future F&E module or a future issue of Captain's Log will address this at some point.
I'm still waiting for the next Captain's Log to come out, number 55. How many years has it been now?
Mm-hmm.
But, so, anyhow, I'll continue on. Sorry.
Too many.
Yeah, so the third thing is, now the next module that we're probably going to see is actually Civil Wars. And the counter sheet for Civil Wars has already been printed. So all that needs to be done now is to complete the rulebook and then print the covers so that you can actually buy everything as a consolidated piece. But, you know, because ADB sells spare parts, you can buy the Civil Wars counter sheet as a spare part right now. And on that counter sheet, you can see there's a bunch of Windcluster fish ships, and there's also some Rebel Romulan, Rebel Vinti, and Rebel Lyran counters. So presumably that means, because the idea is that the Civil War's rulebook is going to include the Wind Royal Return, and because for that you're going to need the Wind fish ships, and you're also going to need the Rebel Vinti ships. It's also going to have the Romulan Civil War, which has a preview in Captain's Log 50, and it's going to have an older, like a pre-General War scenario representing various Lyran Civil Wars that took place like before the Four Powers War. So because the Winds are a relatively small faction, they wouldn't have been enough to fill out Civil Wars by themselves. But also, the Tactical Operations rulebook that came out, a module that came out a couple of years ago, it actually has the older Wind ships, the ones that stay in the cluster, things like auxiliary cruisers and so forth. So there is technically the option of playing the Wind cluster, but right now it's only really if you're trying to defend the cluster, like during the General War. Like there's a generic scenario in Tactical Operations that covers that. It's called Into the Whirlpool, or something Whirlpool, anyway. But in order to use the Winds as a open space empire during the War of Return, we're going to have to wait to see what Civil Wars has to say. But when it comes to the Andromedans, what I was suggesting is, especially now that they're going to be doing separate counters for the satellite ships, you're probably going to need a lot of Andro counters.
So, yes.
And also, one issue is that, I don't know if you saw on the BBF, I was posting a list of missing ships from SFB in the Alpha Octans that are not currently in Federation and Empire. Because one of the problems is that even when Tactical Operations was being published, the guideline that was set is that only ships that existed prior to the beginning of the invasion could be considered. So that's basically around spring Y188. It's like the latest time a ship can exist that would have been eligible for TAC Ops. So that means that there's a fair number of ships and things like Module X1R and other products that they appear after that time period. So they're not in the game system yet. So especially for the ISC. So like the ISC basically as an example, they lose about, historically they lose about 4/5 of their pacification fleet in the first few years of the invasion because they're spread out so far, mm-hmm. and the Andros purposely concentrate on destroying them. So this basically creates three new types of ship that the Andros have to build. The ISC rather has to build out of desperation. One type are war cruisers, like proper warships, like war cruisers and war destroyers. Those can be built or converted in the ISC fleet yards. And so those basically like have to kind of be created from scratch. And even in SFB, it refers to that once the invasion starts, they become regular production warships. The second thing is there's actually a handful of ships. They're called system defense ships. And what happened is, if you look on a map of the Alpha Octant, you'll see all the neutral zones that the ISC basically turns into the cordons for the pacification. And along those cordons, there's a bunch of battle stations. And when the invasion takes place, a lot of these battle stations are destroyed. Right. But the ones that survive, they kind of coalesce into these cantonments. They're kind of like little clumps of ISC-held territory scattered across the Alpha Octant. And the ships that are cut off from home that are in these cantonments, what the ISC engineers do is that they basically design, they have just enough logistical access to be able to build these hull sections that they weld to the bottom of the ship. And this allows them to add more weapons, but it does not allow them to add more warp power. So if you have, like, say, a light cruiser, and if you stick if you weld this section to the bottom of the ship becomes a move cost one ship, but it goes down to speed 24 because it's still only got 24 blocks warp engines. And so those would need the counters as well. And on top of that, there's actually some regular, like, peacetime production ships and variants that only exist in the context of the Andromedan War. So, for example, I think it's Module R11. There is a thing called the Fast Blockade Runner. It basically It's like a fast light cruiser, but what they do is that they take out the plasma torpedoes that face front and, you know, strip low down the weapons, and they add cargo boxes. So the idea is that if there's any critical components or things like PPDs and so forth, they put them into the blockade runner. And the blockade runner, because it's got the fast engines, in theory, it can basically evade Andromedan patrols to the point where it can just about reach the cantonment it needs to be able to pass on those components to let them survive. So, but because that unit, I think it's got a UN service date of something like Y-189 or Y-190, it does not exist yet in Federation Empire either. So that would also need counters. So that's a lot of ISC counters. And and also there's other unit types, things like advanced technology, heavy war destroyers. The Federation is probably going to need a lot of them to go after Andromedan RTN nodes, because the Feds don't have, they don't really have a good equivalent to some of the XPFTs that the Klingons or Romulans have, for example. So those, because they don't appear in the timeline until after, they're not in the game system yet. They don't have counters right now available either. So long story short, I would say that there should be an Andro War product. I think that Andro War should only have Andromedan counters, and that there should be another new like reinforcement module, like something operations, whatever you want to call it, that all of these Alpha Empire ships that are still missing would be published in instead. So you don't need, I mean, ideally you'd buy both modules so that you can play the Andromedan War. But like, say, if you want to put the Andros in some other campaign or whatever, maybe have them show 30 years earlier or something, then you don't have to buy the other module to play them. So yeah, basically that's the long and the short of it. I was thinking it's too big a task to put everything in the same module. So I would recommend splitting them into two.
At the very least, that's what it sounds like, just from hearing how many ships are, ship counters are missing, and of course the number of counters that are going to be needed to be able to play out Andro War. It sounds like that there's going to be a pretty big investment by ADB on counter sheets, because as most of people know here for FNE,
I seem to remember hearing somebody at StratCon last year proposing that Andro War be a full-size counter sheet product. And that certainly, with the latest iteration of their counter sheets being, 200 and some odd counters a page?
Got me on that, because I'm not familiar with FNE counter sheets.
Yeah, the thing was is that they were in the middle. I think the other reason that they were running into trouble was because they were looking to reprint ISC War, because they'd run out of counter sheets for it, and they were running into issues with finding a supplier that could do them.
Yeah, which is always, I think, the issue these days, is finding people that actually will print out counters. And smaller batches than
earlier this summer. You might remember that earlier this year, I think we were discussing on the podcast before, but there's like four older modules, like fighter operations and so forth, that were all getting updated all at once. So many of those older modules had the, I think it was 216 counters instead of 280 per counter sheet. So the floor was opened by ADB for people to be able to propose new ships to go on those counters. So I don't know if they've actually been sent to be printed yet, because a lot of things going on at ADB lately, certain things might have been postponed. But by my understanding is that the new company, whoever they are, they should be in a position to print these counters. So, but I suspect, I think one thing that usually happens is FNE, because their counters are double-sided, I think they tend to be, like, when FNE counters get printed, it's for all FNE at once, but it's like for about four modules worth. So in previous years, there had been times where maybe one or two of the counter sheets that were being printed were for brand new products, and the remainder were to replace or to reprint for older products, if that makes sense.
So right.
It's quite possible that, now again, it's quite possible that by the time the Andromedans are getting printed, maybe what will happen is there'll be space for the four counter sheets to be done.
Right.
Andro War, maybe number one, maybe number two would be this something operations thing I was talking about in terms of getting all the ISC and, you know, Federation and other ships that we need. And then the slot three and four would be reprints of older products that have been used up over time. So that's one way in which you could have a look at it. So I wouldn't panic too much. I mean, people seem to be buying F&E counters at an unhealthy pace, so expect that sooner or later there'll be a point where they'll need to print at least one or two modules more again. So I think once that happens, then, you know, old and new will appear together. So.
Excuse me, Kate.
All right. But I will tell you one last thing. If they did decide to do that reinforcement pack as a separate module without the Andromedans,
mm-hmm.
there would actually be a potential use case if they ever get around to the Lost Empires. Because once you start putting the Paravians on the board, they totally mess up the historical ISC schedule. So, for example, if the Paravians drag the ISC into the Dreadnought War, then using Map Sheet P, then all those wartime ships that they historically didn't build until the Andromedans, well, guess what? They're building them once they're available, because they have to.
Right.
They have to fight the Romulans and ISC and Paravians right there. So all those ships that would be in that counter sheet, like for whatever product you want to put them in, you can use them 20 years early. So you're suddenly basically, not only are you adding a new empire in the form of the Paravians, you're rejuvenating the opportunities that are available for the ISC when you're using that Paravian timeline map. So you're creating a version of the ISC that is distinct from any form of their historical version. So, and I guess even with the Romulans too, because any version of the Romulans that would exist in the Paravian timeline is probably not going to be the same as the one that we know about historically. So that in turn might make things interesting in terms of what a future F&E counter sheet would look like. Now, whether there'd be enough people out there who'd want to buy a Paravian module or not is a little story.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The potential is there, even if it never gets realized.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of finagling, a lot of scheduling, a lot of logistics work when it comes to setting up what counter sheets need to be printed and what ones will be printed, you know, to have so the products that need them will be available. The counters will be available for those products. That's what I mean. So, what was that you say, Jeff?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you.
Okay.
And it's going to take quite a bit of effort on ADB's part to figure out how they actually want to handle it.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay. Well, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. It's getting late and I still have to do stuff. I didn't have even recorded the news portion yet. I need to still record the news portion. But anyhow.
Well, when you do, just don't forget to double check on TalkShoe to make sure that it's not trying to double dip the episode.
Yeah, I'm going to try to look at that tonight a little bit. I might be delaying posting to YouTube until tomorrow because it's going to be late. So, anyhow, Gary, it's been a pleasure having you around and definitely nice to bring up what's happening in BattleTech and definitely how it relates to SOB and what you would like to see. And I'm sure some other people, though, as I said, I think when it comes to a book that's basically just background material, which would be, I think, for some of us, really interesting. I'm not sure if it would be willing to put the work in, let's say, hire someone that might actually be interested in such a product.
Well,
don't know.
If you yourself decide to give a closer look at the Universe source book, maybe in a future episode we could pick it apart and you can tell me what you think.
Okay, we'll do. Okay, well, anyway, you have a good night.
Have a good night, everyone. Happy Halloween.
Jeff. On those
been a wild ride tonight, hadn't
long
it?
And lonely road. yes.
That's the way it works.
I know. Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure having you around.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. And
good night.
May your treat bag be filled with all the candies you love and very few of the candies you hate.
Amen. Okay. Okay, see ya. And lastly, Doug.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you for having me on and stuff.
You're welcome.
I haven't updated Gamer site yet. Possibly next week sometime. Got a few things coming up that are important and like in non-gaming world stuff. But we'll see how it goes. And hopefully I'll be up for updating the site in the middle of the week next week or the week after at the latest. Because guess what? You know, February is going to be popping up pretty darn soon. It's holiday season. Gamers of Winter always sneaks up on everybody because of the holidays. So there's that. If you want to pop up some weekend, let me know.
We'll do. You have a good night.
Thank you.
So, had a wonderful, wonderful evening. Talk about different subjects, and actually, they were mostly related in some way, as a B, which is always good. So, anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.